Good morning, everybody.
Sorry. Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This morning, on our friendly Witch Doctor show, I would like to talk about cystic acne, poor complexion in general. But cystic acne is very, very, very difficult, first of all, to deal with. Very difficult for the young people who are afflicted with it. It's not only uncomfortable, painful, it's really awful to look at. It's not just acne. It's acne that is almost boil-like sores on your face, on your neck, on your back, on your chest. One of my grandchildren and one of my sons had cystic acne. And, of course, the biggest treatment available for it today is Accutane. Accutane is dangerous. They don't even want girls to use it because it can affect you psychologically. And, of course, so can cystic acne. So because of the problems with being called names because of your complexion and because it makes you feel unhealthy. I don't know about you, but if I have any part of me that is sore, an open wound, something along those things, it drags you down. It's not just the wound itself. It's like, you know, I don't know. Psychologically, it's harmful to you to have to deal with something that, first of all, is uncomfortable, like I said, hurts often a lot, and causes people to pass judgment on you. So I asked the girls today to give us some information in regard to the treatment of cystic acne. A lot of times cystic acne has worked from the inside out. Might have something to do with people's eating habits, their hygiene, all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, you can have two people, have them eat the same thing, have them do all the same things, and one gets cystic acne and the other one doesn't. So we can't put a whole lot of emphasis on lifestyle with cystic acne. At least not from my point of view. I'm going to bring the girls in and let them discuss this. And hopefully, if you're out there and you have a son or daughter, or you yourself is suffering from cystic acne, this will help a little bit. I'm going to bring the girls in. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning, Renee. How are you?
I'm good, honey. How are you?
I'm doing well.
That's good. That's good. This is a sensitive subject for me because I've talked about him on the show before. My grandson had cystic acne for well over a year, and I tried all the natural things that the esthetician at the institute recommended, and I painted him and gave him specific vitamins and supplements, and I did all that stuff. And the only thing that really calmed it down, very sadly, was Accutane. But I had to take him off Accutane because he got very emotional. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
Monica's on with us.
Good morning, Monica.
Hi, Shell. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
Good.
What I found... Just to make one comment, Renee, based on everything I'm reading so far, it does appear that diet is not one of the key factors. However,
right.
I disagree with that for one reason, and I'll tell you, because as I'm reading this, I'm connecting the dots with something I experienced on my own. And although diet, I don't believe diet will completely eradicate it, I do believe that diet can either aggravate it or minimize it. And like I'm saying this, because as I'm reading this, I realized that I had a very low-level type of cystic acne, and I never realized I did because it wasn't all over my face. But one of the things I'm reading, which is interesting, is that it's hormonally based. Cystic acne is caused by our hormone fluctuations. Generally, it happens to young boys. It's much more prevalent among males going through puberty than females, although girls get it also. And with girls, it's caused by androgen, which is a male hormone. But women have testosterone and androgen. We just have it at very, very low levels. Women that have higher levels of androgen, which causes polycystic ovarian disease, can get cystic acne. Now, I have polycystic ovarian disease, and I have elevated androgen levels. So that caught my attention. But none of them have made the connection that a meat-based diet with the steroids and hormones, growth hormones they feed the animals, aggravate that. And what happened to me, now, since you've known me, I always get compliments on my skin. Everybody's always complimenting on how healthy my skin looks. But what you didn't know me when I was younger. When I was in my 20s and 30s, I had horrible skin. I would have days that I would be completely broken out. I used to get boils all the time and what are called carbuncles, which is where you get two or three boils next to each other, and it would just form this enormous, it felt like a tumor in my face. I got some on my shoulders. I never got any on my neck, but I did get some on my shoulders. And it was always tied around my menstruation. So during that time of the month, my face would just look horrible, and it would be painful. It wasn't normal acne. I would get these boils, and then it would clear up. And once I became vegetarian, it like stopped on a dime. When I stopped eating meat products, when I stopped taking in things that had hormones in them and steroids and things like that, my face cleared up, and now it's never come back. From a hormone standpoint and how certain types of foods can spike these hormone fluctuations in our body, a lot of my menstruation symptoms also alleviated once I became vegetarian. So that's just something for people to consider and research more. I didn't find anybody that commented on that. I'm just connecting the dots because when I read the androgen levels, which was my situation with the polycystic ovarian disease, that is what caused my face to clear up, and it's remained clear for the last however many years. But it wasn't until I became vegetarian. So that was kind of something I made a connection with today that I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I did say that... about diet, I don't believe either that diet doesn't have something to do with it. But the comparison I was making is the fact that, you know, I have four kids, and they all ate the same dinners, and they all ate the same lunches, and they all ate the same breakfasts. And one kid got it horribly bad, and the other three did not. And the same with the grandchild. Three kids in the family, everybody's eating the same meals, everybody's having the same stuff, and one got it and one didn't. But I also see that there's something, which could be the hormonal aspect of it, that it's relative, so to speak. Now, my grandson has two uncles, one on his mother's side and one on his father's side, that were plagued with cystic acne, extreme cystic acne. And then he got it. So maybe when you talk about hormones and things like that, maybe there is something, so to speak, in the genes. So,
Terry, one of the things that it said on two of the different sites is that it is hereditary, that it runs in families, and that it has to do with, like here, my sister and I, obviously, we have the same parents, we're sisters, but my sister didn't suffer any of the health stuff that I had. I had a hormone imbalance. My sister doesn't. My sister doesn't have, so I don't know why I do and she doesn't, but this was a birth defect, okay? My ovaries were defective. Polycystic ovarian disease is a malfunctioning of the ovaries. It causes hormone fluctuations. So my body produces these high levels of androgen, which aren't natural in a female's body, and it caused a lot of other issues for me, not just the acne, but it caused other problems for me. Now, my sister doesn't have that. My sister doesn't have polycystic ovarian disease. So she never had a lot of the issues that I had with, you know, with blemishes, with pain and things like that. So here, you know, so, but it is hereditary in families. So it doesn't mean that every child is going to get it, but it tends to run in families.
So how does, explain if you can, how that's possible to, you know, be a problem for a guy. We lost Monica. She's coming back. Oh, there she is. She's back. how can you explain, I mean, is that something that
they're
would...
They're just saying it's more prevalent among boys and girls. They're saying more... And I guess because it is linked to hormone male hormone fluctuations, so testosterone and androgen, and because, you know, when boys are going... And it's more prevalent during puberty. Now my nephew-in-law, my niece's husband, he's had cystic acne his entire life. He's actually had to have surgery because of it, because he gets these cysts so large that one time one of the cysts wrapped around a nerve in his neck and was could have caused you know, severe damage. He was actually starting to have problems from it. So they had to go in and surgically lance it and clear it out because it was pressing on nerves in his neck. And it had become the size of a golf ball. It was just enormous. And that's happened to him a couple of times. He had to have one surgery in the last few years after he married my niece. But since he became vegetarian, he's no longer vegan, but he's still vegetarian, it happens a lot less. He did notice that his breakouts happen a lot less, because it is linked to hormone fluctuations. So the time that it happens mostly is during puberty in boys and girls, and it's more prevalent in boys because obviously boys go through more fluctuations in male hormones than girls, unless the girls have something like I did, like polycystic ovarian disease, which also causes imbalances in the male hormone. Now, I had normal levels of female hormone. I was luckier than a lot of other girls. So I formed breasts. You know, I had a girly shape, okay? Some women that have polycystic ovarian disease end up balding on the top of their, they lose the female pattern hair growth. They end up not growing breasts. They have awkward-shaped bodies, you know, not feminine-shaped bodies. But in my particular case, I had an excess of androgens in my body, but I had the normal amount of female hormone. So my body did the right female things with complications, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But generally it afflicts pubescent boys more than pubescent girls.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, I don't remember ever, and maybe I did, but I don't remember it. I don't ever remember seeing a girl with cystic acne. Not the kind of cystic acne that I've seen the boys with. So that's obviously
there were pictures of a couple of women on here. So evidently it does happen, and they look just as bad as what I've seen with Justin and stuff like that. I mean, these women's faces were just as bad. But it is rarer. It is rarer. It's very common among adolescent pubescent boys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are we thinking? I have two different questions. One, of course, is the treatment of it, the possible alleviation of some of the pain that's involved. I mean, if you've ever had a boil, any part on your body, it hurts. Boils hurt. And if they are around your neck, where you wear collars on your shirt, have to cover them and everything, it can be, I remember, more the grandson than my son. My son, it was horrible for him, albeit, but Spikey was even worse. And so I'd like to know if we came up with any remedies for treatment of that maybe even helps alleviate some of the discomfort. And then obviously, when I looked, anything that has to do with treatment after the fact to alleviate some of the scars and everything, I'm hoping Monica has maybe the Manuka honey, or I have tried the coconut oil. It actually made me worse. I had to stop using it because it made me where I get nervous breakouts, nothing like cystic acne. But just because I'm anxious every now and then, I know that's hard to believe about me, but I pick at my and I will have breakouts like that. And I never did as a kid. So I use the coconut oil. I've also used the coconut oil in the treatment of Spike's neck from the radiation burns. And they told him at the doctor's office that was okay, but that it all has to be gone before he gets the radiation again. He has to have it all completely washed off four
wow.
hours before he receives radiation, because it's a conductive of the cooking, if you get what the oil on his skin actually makes him fry more. So,
makes sense, but it's, wow, yeah, you wouldn't have thought that, but now that you hear it, I guess it sort of makes sense.
Yeah. So I didn't have the two teenagers that are here. Neither one of them have cystic acne. They just have minor breakouts, and I do think a lot of their breakouts are due to their eating habits. But like I said, it's not cystic. So
well,
I want to know any ideas. Okay, I want to know if we have ideas about reducing the scars and the treatment of when they, neither one, Mike or grandson Spikey, have either one of these problems anymore, but they both have scars and they both wear facial hair to hide the scars. So let's see what we can do about talking about when you're going through it and after the fact when you've outgrown it. And again, I want to give a warning to everybody out there about Accutane. Yes, it does take care of the issue, but it is very, very harmful to their psyche. My grandson would burst into tears over nothing. One day I remember we were playing and I punched him in the arm, and I do that with all of them. We were playing and he burst into tears, and that's when I took him off the Accutane. So,
yep. All the sites that mention Accutane all mentioned it with warnings. They all said that it's very effective, but that it has a myriad, not one, it has a myriad of side effects. So that...
Yep.
If you can get it under control in other ways, it's beneficial.
Yeah, and that's what we did. I tried, like I said, I tried a lot of different things, and really none of them worked but the Accutane. So I'm interested to see if you guys have come up with anything. What do you think, Monica?
Okay, well, I was doing more research on it, and I guess the last time we talked about it, I said... You know, the coconut oil. And I said the Manuka honey. But those are topical things that could help, okay? But from the research that I was doing last night and yesterday, I wanted to see why there's acne, why there's acne vulgaris and cystic acne, which is the severe form of acne vulgaris, and get to the deeper meaning of it. Why is it happening? Well, it turns out that, as Shelley said, it has to do with hormones.
Yeah.
But the liver is the key regulator of hormones. And if your liver has a toxic load and it can't get rid of the toxins fast enough, it will give you a weakened immune system, a lot of other symptoms, of a liver dysfunction, weakened immune system, neurological defects, blood sugar problems, nutrient malabsorption, digestive problems. But one of the biggest symptoms, or the symptom that we're talking about right now, it gives you acne. Okay? So in order to get rid of the acne, you have to get rid of the toxic load from your liver. Now, Rini, you said that you used the coconut oil and it made your symptoms worse, or you started to get skin problems.
I just made a bigger breakout, yeah.
Yeah, that's because coconut oil helps detoxify your liver. And when you detoxify your liver, it's just one small thing. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. But when you detoxify your liver, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And the way, one of the ways it gets worse first, it shows up in your skin. And your acne or zits, pimples, whatever, will get worse. And that's why people always back off of these liver detoxifiers, because they will get sick. And their skin will show it. Their hair will show it. Everything. Because it's really hard to go through. And that's why a lot of doctors, a lot of naturopaths say you have to gently detoxify the liver so that you don't get violently sick or have all these skin eruptions and acne, cystic acne, any of that, psoriasis, rosacea, a toxic load on your liver, and it's not... go ahead.
Well, I know that certainly follows suit, because I know that alcoholics very, very often have skin issues, mostly things like psoriasis, eczema. Their skin dries out, they get red... around their nose and around the sides of their eyes, and they'll get the flaky skin and everything because of the liver.
Absolutely.
That makes perfect sense. I remember, too, now this is coming back to me, that when we talked about this before, we discussed the liver flush that we used to have a lot of the actually more healthy guests do at the Institute. The liver flush is very beneficial for those things. So do you think doing a bona fide, which is traumatic, everybody, it's not something you want to do. You have to get up and go to work every day. It's not something, and some people handle it very nicely, but I wouldn't take the chance. I would say to you that if you want to do a liver flush, it's very good for you to do that, even if you're perfectly healthy for a myriad of reasons. It's your body filter, and you change the filters on your AC, so it only makes sense that that happen every now and then. But it is traumatic for a lot of people. Not everybody, but for a lot of people it's traumatic. So, and I promised it then that I would get the written protocol for the liver flush that they use at the Institute. And I want to say that I got it, and now I don't know what I did with it. So I will get that again. And we'll talk about that. Do you have any kind of a liver flush that you've ever worked with, Monica or Shelley? Do you remember the liver flush that we did at the Institute?
I don't know.
I haven't. No.
I have a copy of it, by the way. But no, I don't recall off the top of my head what the protocol was. But following up on what you just said, though, Rini, I highly recommend that if somebody's going to do a liver flush or any type of a, because there's other types of flushes, if you're going to do any type of a cleansing flush of the body, which generally go 2 or 3 days, you should really do it at a time when you can stay home, because it puts a lot of stress on the body. You should not be dealing with external stress like pressures from a job or having to be physically active, especially if you have a physically active job. But even if you have an emotionally or mentally active job, you should be doing any kind of a flush like this when you can take a couple of days off, either over a weekend or if you have some vacation time or even sick time. allow your body to go through the flush effectively. And if you're under too much external stress, it's going to actually potentially make it harmful to you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. Go ahead, honey.
Okay. I just wanted to jump on top of what Shelley said as far as the androgens and quickly read this sentence concerning the liver and hormones. And it says, the liver filters and detoxifies cholesterol, fats, hormones, drugs, caffeine, alcohol, and other toxic byproducts or in the body. When the liver is overloaded with too much hormones such as androgens or estrogens, too much alcohol, caffeine, or inflammatory byproducts from the food we eat, it can result in skin conditions such as acne, eczema, psoriasis, and rosacea. So I just wanted to say that. Or I forgot. I'm sorry.
No, that you pointed that out.
Yeah, and that's
But the liver has everything to do with your skin too, and your gut, all that. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I mean, you know, we're all a long way away, and we're on the phone. You can't read somebody's language, and they're going to talk. So on the phone, we all get excited.
No.
Time, but I think that we've hit on something very, very important. I wonder if there would be a way. I'll call Valerie today and have her get me the written protocol for the liver flush that's used at the Institute. And it's a tough one. And I know that there are several out there. So maybe you guys are much better at this than I am. If we could maybe get some of them, put them together, and come up with something that's not quite as traumatic. The one that we did at the Institute, like Shelley said, sometimes for 3 days people would be down and out. And not everybody, though. Some people handled it with real flair. And, of course, the key is, and we talk about this all the time, is to keep drinking lots and lots of water to continue the flushing action so that it doesn't have to flush itself. So water is a key, and of course at the Institute, they serve green drinks constantly, which helps as well. But I do think that that's one of the keys. So now we know that is a key to helping clear it up internally. What do we do topically again? Let's go over that again. The same kind of protocol that we talked about before with the Manuka. Is there something else? Because, you know, everybody likes to see something happen right away, right, just like we talked about. So what do you think is the best idea?
In that regard, and I'm curious to see if Monica has found any of these same things or she might have things that on top of this. But this one site that I liked, the first two sites that I went on were all about Accutane and very, very heavy medical. They didn't really go into any others. This woman talks about Accutane, but also went into a lot of other things that the other, and it's actually called Paula's Choice, which I thought was interesting because we have a dear friend of ours named Paula. So that's what even caught my eye to look at this site. Evidently, she has a line of holistic skincare products and that kind of thing. But anyway, what she was talking about on there, and it makes a lot of sense to me, is exfoliating. The other two sites said the same thing, by the way, that somebody with cystic acne should be exfoliating their face at least once a week with some sort of salicylic acid-based solution. And then she said, but you have to make sure that it has safe ingredients and it's not too harsh. And the purpose of that is because a lot of what aggravates the cystic acne is the dead skin cells then clog the pores even more. Basically what cystic acne is, it's clogged pores deep, and it goes deep inside the skin. You have an overproduction of oil, and it ends up getting infected and creating these large boils that are very, very deep inside the skin. That's why it's so painful. So you have to keep the topical area of the skin free of dead skin cells, which just compound the problem. There were three things she mentioned. that were unique to her type. The second thing is using a benzoyl peroxide followed with an oil-free moisturizer. She said it's very important that once you cleanse the skin with topical benzoyl peroxide to clear the area of any bacteria, which just compounds the problem. She said you have to follow with a moisturizer, but make sure it's an oil-free moisturizer, because if you use an oil moisturizer, you're just putting back what you just cleaned. And then the third thing she said, which there's starting to be much more relief from, is using PDT therapy, which is photodynamic therapy, which applies a photosensitizing cream to the face with exposure to blue and red LED lights. And she said that there's being a lot of research done on that, where they're finding that a lot of people with this type of acne do start seeing some improvement in the face and clearing of some of these deep, deep boils while they're during the light therapy. But she said it takes repetitive sessions to get to see good results with that.
Yeah, most of the people we work with, Catherine and Anne Marie and other estheticians that I've worked with, are big believers in the LED light. And my story with the LED light I may have shared on the air before, but my daughter had a cat who was running away from a dog jump on top of her head and get tangled in her long hair, and nobody could get the cat off of her head. But when the cat, of course, decided he didn't want to be on her head anymore, he took off. And his hind legs, his back feet, lacerated Diana's head on both sides. And we took her to I cleaned up the wounds, and we took her to the hospital, and they did next to nothing other than give her a shot for pain and cleaned up the wounds and said, there's nothing we can do. We can't sew them up. You can't sew up a cat wound because of cat scratch fever and various infections that can loom if the wound isn't left open to heal. So I did that for a week. I treated her with actually Ocean Solutions, which is a filtered ocean water that has lots of nutrients and things in it. And I used the LED light. I used colloidal silver, and after I did all that and cleaned it with all of those things, I did use Neosporin on it because I feared that, because it was in her hair, in the thickest part of her hair, that things would get in the open wound. So I put a little bit, I chose Neosporin over any kind of petroleum jelly, because I didn't trust the chemicals in that either, and we healed her. And she even has, in most of those places, except for, I think, one, hair grew back. So the LED light is very powerful, and I agree with the LED light. And I also agree with the exfoliation. Okay, so now if you're going to exfoliate and you're not going to use, the other thing about peroxide, do both of you agree with the fact that peroxide breaks down skin tissue?
Well, yeah, that's why she says you have to follow it with the moisturizer.
Mm-hmm.
She said it's not a good idea to use anything that has alcohol in it, although everybody goes to alcohol to. She's saying that this is a better way to get the bacteria off the face, but then you have to immediately follow it with an oil-free moisturizer. She said it has to be a combo protocol. You can't just use the benzoyl peroxide. And she gave a particular formula that it has to be free of alcohol and, you know, free of a bunch of other stuff, very natural product. She said you can, you know, just look for something that has basic good ingredients and then follow it up with a good oil-free moisturizer. So, yeah, you know, if you left it on all by itself, it would be damaging. But it's not damaging if you just use it to get rid of the bacteria and then follow it up with a moisturizer, then you wouldn't be damaged. But if you just leave it on, then, yeah, it would be causing more skin irritation over time.
Well, but, you know, okay, now this is purely from the first time I'm hearing this, I'm trying to think like I don't know other stuff that we were taught at the Institute, but it seems to me that if you're going to put peroxide on, and even though you're going to put a moisturizer on afterwards, you still the peroxide is still there. The moisturizer moisturizes your skin again, but the peroxide is still in there working in the tissue under, you know, the fatty tissue that's in your face.
Used peroxide topically. It's never harmed me, so I'm not sure. I've always used peroxide.
According to the according to what we were taught at the Institute, peroxide is great, many, many things. But according to the leaders there, peroxide breaks down skin tissue after prolonged use. So I'm only alerting people to that. I'm not saying that the protocol this lady wrote, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't believe in peroxide. We've talked about food-grade peroxide, and I think Monica may even have something to share in regard to food-grade peroxide. And I told the story of the people who overcame throat cancer with gargling food-grade peroxide. And when I was a little girl, if I got strep throat, Grandma Cecil used to put peroxide on a Q-tip and swab the white spots on my throat with the peroxide. So it's been around for a long time, and I don't know that I like to put everything out there because that's what we were always told over there, that the peroxide will break down skin tissue. And on your face, you don't have a lot of skin tissue. It's the only place on our bodies, except for like maybe our knees and our elbows, stuff like that, where the skin is really, really, you know, there's not a lot of fat on your face. I mean, most of us. So I don't know. I'm just bringing that up because that's...
Oh, by the way, there's this here. I'll send it to you and Monica later. It's called the End All Liver and Gallbladder Flush. A lot of times when people do a liver flush, you're flushing the gallbladder simultaneously. So a lot of people do a combo flush. And it works with apple juice, Epsom salts, oranges, and olive oil. This now I remember why I thought this was so harsh, because you have to do like the apple juice and Epsom salts, and then you have to follow it. The last thing you do is the olive oil. You have to drink like a cup of olive oil or something. So there's a whole, it's a six-day regimen here, by the way. Not a three-day, it's a six-day regimen, and it can actually have the body expel gallstones at the end of the process. But it's very interesting. There's a whole list of symptoms here that are caused from a toxic liver or gallbladder, and low appetite, hemorrhoids, pancreatitis, which is what leads into diabetes, brain disorders, impotence, menstrual. I mean, it just goes on. There's a list of about 35 different things, including asthma, Alzheimer's disease. These are all caused by a disease or a toxic liver. So I'll send it to you guys later so you can look at this. But maybe we want to research this a little more. And maybe we should all try it and then give our results on the air.
Well, I'd be all right with that. I would guess it would be beneficial for us, not so much fun, but certainly beneficial for us. I don't see why.
I'll send you guys the link later and we can talk about it.
Okay. Monica, while we're on the subject, so we track on it, will you fill us in a little bit on the food grade peroxide, some of the testing you did with that?
Yes, the food grade peroxide is very good for the skin, but it has to be reduced down. First of all, peroxide is just oxygen and water, totally safe, but it must be food grade peroxide and not the stuff you buy at every drugstore, grocery store, you know, that costs, 50 cents? That has stabilizers in it, which is toxic to your skin and your body. You certainly can't drink that peroxide that you get at the grocery store because of the stabilizers. But food-grade peroxide, I've been drinking it, and I haven't been drinking a lot. I take 3% food grade peroxide, 4 tablespoons in a gallon of distilled water, and for a slow detox and to clean up bacteria in your body. It also helps your skin. It does a lot of things. You could research it, Google it. It says to drink 8 to 10 glasses of water a day. Well, I'm lucky if I drink one because I just don't like water. It has no taste other than it tasting like water, but it has to be really reduced. And most of the food-grade peroxide you see on the Internet is 35%. I bought the one that has already been reduced down to 3%. 35% is caustic and can hurt you, and there's lots of warnings out there. So people who are buying the peroxide, 35% peroxide, are using maybe a half a teaspoon to a gallon of water, that sort of thing. It really needs to be reduced. The 3% that I bought, I'm using it on my skin, okay? Like I said, I also drink it. When you use even the 3% that I bought on a sore, a scratch, and you see it bubbling up, then yes, that is tearing away part of the skin, okay?
Yeah.
But you are getting the germs out, and you would only let it bubble up for a few seconds before you wipe it off. That just happened the other day when I was down at my chickens, and I got scratched, and I rushed back up here and sprayed the 3% without it being reduced with water right on my skin because... they're chickens,
and
they do carry diseases. So, but, yeah, that's the story on food-grade peroxide. If you're going to use it, you can use it topically, but it must be reduced to at least 3%. And it will help make your skin and pores and all that much nicer, according to everything I've read. I've only been using it for about a week and a half now in that regard. But I did want to go back, before we run out of time, I did want to go back to what you were saying about the carbuncles and cysts on the skin for your son and grandson.
Right.
And one thing that I know works really well, not so much topically, but internally, is turmeric capsules that you mix with. It has to be mixed. I make my own. It has to be mixed in a certain way. First of all, I'll give you my recipe real quick. It's turmeric, organic turmeric, mixed with a little coconut oil. Also, and then mixed, put in about a quarter teaspoon of organic black pepper. That makes it 1,000 times more potent. This is what I had a boil. I think I told you before. I did have a boil. Painful. My God, I can't imagine having something like that on my face or my neck.
But I thought my spiky, he probably would have anywhere from 8 to 15 of them all at one time, all around his neck.
Oh, my God.
That was horrible.
Well,
it was horrible.
Yeah. The first time I had a boil, I didn't know what it was, and it was painful. And it was in a place where the sun don't shine. And I guess it's because I was detoxing, my experiments and craziness that I do, that's why it was happening. And I started doing research on it, and it took me a while to discover the turmeric. So the next time one came up, I immediately ran for my turmeric. I already had these pills made up. It's very easy to do. There's even a good recipe on my Facebook page on how to make turmeric milk, okay, which is basically the same recipe, a tablespoon of turmeric, a tablespoon of coconut oil to make into a thick paste, cook it on the stove, just barely simmering it. Add your black pepper, and then it's a paste. Then you take a teaspoon of that and put it in almond milk, coconut milk, and drink it, if that's the way you want to do it. I take my turmeric coconut oil and black pepper and put it in a capsule and, you know, encapsulate it. 6 capsules 3 times a day. By the next day, that boil was gone. I mean gone. I could not believe it. So, and if it worked for me, you know, it's worth a try.
I find that to be, although I'm a big believer in turmeric, and I also know that black pepper has all kinds of advantages. Normally at the Institute, if somebody has even heart issues, things like cayenne and hawthorn and things like that are utilized to help their blood a little bit and give their heart a bit of a break. So I can see the medicinal purposes in that mixture. You know, what does something like that do for joint pain? I mean, that must be good for joint pain too, because you've got a lubricant, you've got the turmeric, and you've got. Mm-hmm. I'll bet that would be good for like any kind of joint pain. Do you think?
Anytime I have any kind of pain, slight headache, and because of the different remedies that I make and things like that, I used to get headaches every day, and sometimes migraines. I haven't had a headache in months, which is amazing to me, but the couple of times that, you know, you kind of feel it like right over your eyes, I take my turmeric capsule, take a couple of them, and it goes away. This stuff is really good. I'm going to make some up. I'm pretty low myself. I am going to make some up, and I'm going to send you a bottle of my turmeric capsules for you to try for your son, your grandson, to see if it helps somehow. I know... You know, if they have that many cysts
or
whatever,
they don't anymore. They're good now. I mean,
they're good
now. They have scars, but they don't get the cystic acne anymore since they've been out of like Shelley says. I think it's more, you know, age 13 all the way up to like 17 is where it's really prevalent with boys. Are those the ages you saw, Shell?
Well, it's at puberty, and you know, since girls and boys will go through puberty at different age groupings, it's during those years. So if that's when his hormones were fluctuating, that's when it would have happened to him. But, yeah, that you're talking about the right age time frame, which is pubescence.
Right. Well, now what I need for them, if we're going to do something that would be beneficial for both of them, and I'm sure a lot of other people out there, is something with the scars. And I think that everything I looked up is dermabrasion and, you know, where you go in and get the, there's 2 or 3 different sites that's all about a product that somebody's trying to sell. And, of course, you can get, you know, facial stuff done. I'm drawing a blank on all the names of everything, but, you know, you have your face scraped and have this done and that done, and I'm not looking to do that to these men because they, first of all, wouldn't sit still for it. But if there was something that would help soothe out, I mean, Spikey looks like he had severe measles. They almost look like pockmarks on his face, and he keeps a beard to cover most of them, and so does Michael.
Yeah, so, most of the sites that I was reading, they all talk about the scarring. That's something that's so common in this because the cystic acne actually degrades the top layers of the skin so that even once it heals, you are left with these awful scars. So there's all kinds of scar protocols. There's even doctors that specialize in scar reduction through laser therapy, through, well, like you said, you don't want to do the dermabrasion. That's one of the ways they do it. They actually gently remove the outer layers of the skin so that the skin pushes forward and actually grows new skin. But there are certain things that you can do. They sell scar reducing creams. You know, you like the Palmers and things like that. They use for stretch marks and scars. And I know a few people that have had some relief with that. Not that they had cystic acne, but that they had scars from other things. And these scar creams that they sell do help with that.
Yeah, there used to be one called Mother's Little Helper that you could use on your stomach and on your breast after the birth of a baby. And you get those stretch marks. But most of those are based with like a cocoa butter or, you know, something along those lines. And I've always been wary of those because like what Monica just said, and you said it too when you were talking about the things that you read, you clog up the pores again.
Right.
With oil, you know.
Right.
And I don't know that it's coconut oil, even the texture seems to be different. It has a real clean feel. And even if you taste it, it doesn't taste like anything. And, of course, I see lots of places now, even at Walmart, you can buy coconut oil to cook with because it's just better for...
Yeah, but that's really poor grade at Walmart. I've bought it, and it's horrible. But I cook with it all the time. I eat it on English muffins. It's a good way to get it into your system because it does do a lot of things. Anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, anti-toxin, anti-everything. But
yeah. Well, like I know a lot of people that use coconut oil, a lot of raw foodies that I talk with a lot, and they all use it in their food. And I think that, but it's still, because it's so light, I don't think of it as clogging the pores, but I could be wrong about that. I guess it would all depend on how, you know, how your skin soaks it up. But other oils, what about the Manuka honey to help smooth out the scar tissue on a cystic acne face?
I haven't looked into that as far as scar tissue. So I really can't, you know, comment to see if it would be actually do anything. But yeah, I didn't realize that your son and grandson had, you know, such scarring from it. But I can definitely look that up. There is something. I read so much, and it all kind of mushes together. But I do recall in the last couple of days something that will help scar tissue look smoother. So I'll get back to you on that, Rainey.
Well, because the other person that could use that, although, and I'm going to talk about this briefly, but the scar tissue on the grandson that got set on fire is very strange. If you saw him, Shelley hasn't seen him in a while. He's, he's bulking. He's a grown man now. He is muscular. And he's probably put on, gosh, since this happened, easily 100 pounds. And he lifts weights and things like that, so he's very muscular. But the scar tissue, I mean, I can still see the real bad places. And I ended up using some of the, it's Silverdine or something like that. I got some of that from Mike and Val yesterday to put on the burn on Spike's neck. And it alleviated some of the pain almost immediately. And they sent me to the drugstore yesterday for a water solution, like a poultice thing that I soak in cold water. I keep it in the refrigerator, and you mix up the poultice, and I put a pack on his neck to take some of the fire out of the burn on the side of his neck, because, I mean, that blistered, raised up, and then he has to go every day. So they just keep burning it again and again and again. So I think the Silverdine was the most protection, because it almost forms a scab over it. And that's what we used to do to Mike. After Mike got better, he still had several places on his body that were burnt so deep that they would get like holes of that protective stuff that your own body puts out. It's like a white, sticky, and it's not, God, I even hate saying this word, it's not pussy, but it's like protective, and it's thick. And he had one on his left arm, and he had one on his abdomen on the right-hand side, like just below his chest. And they were really, really burnt bad. And the smell was horrific. So when we started getting better and the bandages came off and we could just do the Silverdine in the places where it was the worst, we would, like, pack it on those places. And it healed it. And what it did was it let the tissue push back out of those holes.
Wow.
And now he has strange scars from skin grafts, from, you know, in the very beginning they put cadaver skin on so that your own skin can heal under the cadaver skin. And then the cadaver skin almost turns like to scabs because it's dead. And when it starts to do that, then that comes off and your good skin, like, pushes it away. And it's an amazing, it's an amazing program, transition, whatever you want to call it, that takes place, because your own, we even had, some of Mike's skin growing, stem cell was being done for him, but it's so difficult to work with. It's like the very thinnest phyllo dough, or one layer of bathroom tissue wet. That's how difficult it is to deal with. So they didn't end up using it. Everything that they did worked. But the protection on the skin seemed to let his own body regenerate. So, but once a scar is formed, then that's real tissue. And there's not much you can do aside from, like, the dermabrasion and things like that. So let's research this. I will do some of this too, and see if we can come up with any of the natural things. Maybe magnesium oil helps as well, which of course you both are very aware of, the magnesium oil. But we use magnesium oil on Mike a lot, and magnesium oil is not real greasy either. It's very watery, and maybe that would be an idea. I don't know. But maybe I'll do a little. I have those things here, so maybe I'll do a little experimentation on Spikey, and stuff helps. But thanks, girls. I think we ended up today, though, with more questions than we had when we started. I like
that's
that.
That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
So, but we will we'll do the show again. We'll spend some time researching, and we'll do the show again about the scar tissue, because I think that's a good self-esteem booster, is being able to have somebody not have bad scars. So thank you, and it was great, and I appreciate all your input, and I'm looking forward to getting those capsules, because I would like to try those, Monica. That sounds great. So everybody, okay. Go out and have. a great day. The sun is shining here in South Florida. We're supposed to be in the high 90s, which I'm really not looking forward to, but those of you who are in weather are probably boo-hooing me right now. So everybody go out and have a great day. God bless. Thank you. Thanks, girls.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Renee. Bye, Monica.
Bye-bye.